This is Tom Gatewood in the home of Mr. James Burgess. This tape is sponsored by the Folklore Foundation of Kentucky. It is on the subject of health care in the 20th century in Kentucky. Tom Gatewood doing the interview. Mr. Burgess is a graduate of the University of Louisville in the School of Pharmacy there, and came to McCrary County and established the first private drugstore in the county, in the city of Whitley City. Mr. Burgess, had you any background, had you worked around a pharmacist before you went to pharmacy school?
No, I hadn't.
What caused you to decide to go into that type of profession?
Well, I'll tell you, really, I wanted to study medicine is what I wanted to do, be a doctor. And at that time, the schools were pretty well limited with the doctors they wanted to enroll. So therefore, you had to, as I understood, you had to have either a congressman to get you in, or have an outstanding relative that was a doctor, or an outstanding doctor in the locality to recommend you, which I didn't have either one of them. So we had a fellow there at home, Mr. Dyer, he was from Albany, that had a drugstore there when I was growing up. So back then, I reckon the children, since they didn't have any kind of counseling or anything, most of us just didn't really know what we wanted to do, honestly. So when I finished high school, he had a boy over in Albany who was going to go up to study pharmacy that he was going to take up there. So he asked me one day, he said, "You know, what are you planning on doing?" I said, "Well, I don't know, Doc." I called him Doc Dyer.
We did that in my community. He
said, "Well, I'm taking a boy up at the Louisville College of Pharmacy. Why don't you just go with him and enroll up there?" I said, "Well, I might just well, because I don't have anything in mind that I'm going to do." So that's how I got started in it. And I didn't know a thing about what a drugstore was like. All I knew was just what little bit of, you know, when I go pick up medicine or something for my dad. And that's about all I knew about a drugstore.
And you grew up in around Albany?
No, I grew up in Burnside.
In Burnside, I see. But you knew this person in Albany that...
Well, yeah, he was the druggist there at Burnside from Albany.
Well, yeah. I have a friend that was the way he got into it. He knew the druggist there, although he did work at the drugstore. But the doctor, we call him Dr., I think it was Dr. Hawkins, he knew that Brennan McCarty was an able person, and he was interested in healthcare and in science, you know, and so he suggested and got him in the pharmacy school. That's kind of a common pattern where you do that. Now, when you got to Louisville, did you enjoy your work there, your studies at the school?
Yes, I really did. Quite a bit of the subject matter I'd never had, such as chemistry and of course those subjects pertaining to medicine itself. I'd never had anything like that in high school. It was a little tough, but after a while, I finally got used to it, and I really did enjoy it.
And you started there in what year?
1933.
And finished?
37.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I was during the flood there in Louisville. Got washed out.
Right. Had accounts of that by other people on tape. What caused you to come to this area? Did you first come here right out of school?
Yes, for a permanent position. Now, of course, at that time you had my class was the first 4-year schooling that they had. Before that, they only had 2 and 3. Years of schooling and so many years of apprenticeship. Well, my class was the first 4-year class, and I had to have 2 years apprenticeship. So, see, I took, I'd worked in other drugstores in various places, during the summer months to gain that 2 years' time. And I had finished school before I got my 2 years completed, because I had to take a year later after I'd already finished school before I even got a diploma.
Where did you take that?
Well, at various drug stores over the, some of the, in the state of Kentucky and some in Tennessee, to get my time, because I could only work just a small length of time because of the summer months. You see, at that time they wouldn't count if you worked while you were going to school. It had to be after school was either out in the summer months or after I'd finished school at the end of my 4 years.
In your practice there as an apprentice, did you involved in actually preparing drugs some, or was it totally?
Well, I'll tell you, back then, it was altogether different then than it is now. Back then, you had to do about everything, from sweeping floors, working behind the fountain, and some prescription work and delivery service, and just about everything that was need to be done. Mm-hmm. This day and time, it's not that way. Usually these boys that finish pharmacy school now, why, they're stuck in the prescription department, and that's about all they do, most of them. They have very little training as far as the salesmanship and whatnot, or I found it so. They may have it in schools now, but they didn't have it when I went to school.
That was probably a good experience for you, though, in running a whole drug store, wasn't it, in the system?
Yes, it was. I had some good men that I worked with after I got out there, really and truly, that... as far as the running of a drugstore, I learned more, I guess, 2 years after I got out on the supervision of some of these old pharmacists than I learned in the whole school.
Could you comment on some of those experiences you had and who, if you can remember their names or where they were?
Well, let's see. I worked in Sweetwater, Tennessee. I don't recall the name of the pharmacy nor the pharmacist. That was while I was still going to school. Then I worked some for Byron Begley over in London, Kentucky. Beginner of Begley drug chain. And then I worked for Lane's a while in Chattanooga. That was during my apprenticeship. And for Cole's Drug in Knoxville, Tennessee, I worked over there for him about a year and a half. And that's when then, after I came up here, I came here right from over there. And I gained, those were chain stores, and they were really a great help to me for out front work, because they had a good training program.
Could you tell us a little bit about this area before you came here and why you came here? In particular, was this a pretty booming coal area at that time?
Well, it had been, but it had begun to sort of slow down, because they used to be, they closed up a lot of their mines in the meantime, and they were just seemingly gradually phasing them out. And when we came here, they were still in the lumber business, but while after we came here a while, they phased that lumber business completely out. How come me to come here was we had a fellow that's a lawyer here now, Homer Ramsey, that was teaching school at that time at Burnside. And of course, my uncle went in with me. As a matter of fact, he was the one that supplied the money, because I didn't have any money.
I can imagine.
And Homer had talked to him. He lived in the room there at the same place that my uncle lived, and he had talked to him about it, and Uncle George told him that I was sort of looking for a place to set up a drugstore, and I had two or three different places in mind, although I didn't know anything about any of them. It's just looking, that's about all. And so he sort of sold Uncle George on the idea that there'd never been a drugstore in this county, that, except this one, you know, I spoke of just a few minutes ago before that we started this interview, that I don't know how long it really lasted before.
Was it connected directly with the Stearns London Coal?
I suppose it was, because see, it wasn't here when I came here. It had already gone out of existence.
So the people here didn't have any pharmaceutical service when
nothing
you came?
Nothing except from the doctors.
Mm-hmm. And they probably would have to order it or go to Somerset and pick it up. How did the people do?
Well, I guess where they probably had gone to other places, you know, the hospitals maybe around Lexington and so forth like that, if they were given any orders for any medicine, I assume they got them there in Lexington or wherever they were, because they certainly couldn't have gotten them here. Although the doctors did handle some of those things that maybe of emergency nature, of treating ailments, common ailments around here, and that mostly, I wouldn't say emergencies exactly, because they'd have to refer them then to hospitals. And the only hospitals I reckon around close by that I can remember was Somerset, and they had one in Oneida, but I can't tell you how long it's been there. Somerset, of course, had one for ever since I can remember.
Did, when you came here, how many doctors were there in the area, approximately, that you remember?
Four or five, I guess, maybe more. I can't recall, because I didn't. They had some of the camps that I never did know. I just had heard of them. But about five of them I knew personally.
So this, the when you started your pharmacy and doctors started coming in, did they start writing prescriptions for patients? How did the people react to that? Were they most accustomed to it?
No, they weren't. As a matter of fact, most of these doctors didn't write prescriptions more or less like they do at the present time. They just sort of wrote out an order of anything they wanted dispensed at the drugstore. It wasn't hardly that you could determine a prescription, because I've had to show some of them how to write some of them of what they
yeah.
wanted.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. They knew what they wanted as far as the medications were concerned, but they didn't know just how to write it out, because I evidently they hadn't been schooled too much, because you know that these fellows that I'm talking about were, oh gee, they'd been out of school for long before I guess that prescriptions were really made use of.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So you had to really somewhat of a teaching function with the doctors to.
Showing them how they knew what they wanted, mm-hmm. but they didn't know how to write it out or how to even write the directions of what we'd actually term a prescription. They could write it out as an order, you know, more or less. If they were writing, say, for instance, to give an order to an individual to do such and such, or go in another dispensary and just count out so many pills and give it the patient, but as far as being able to write out a prescription with what we would term a prescription, I didn't know too much about it.
That's very interesting. I gather what you're saying is that in that period there was a definite prescription for the pharmacist to fill, that you understood how to fill. You actually had to mix things. It wasn't, you didn't just pick it off the counter. Or not, I don't mean pick it off the counter, but I understand now it seems that a lot of times drug is just simply, the things are prepared. You just say, I want such a thiocene, something that they, yeah, it's already prepared at a culprit. You did more actual mixing of drugs.
At that time, yes. You filled your own capsules, you made your own ointments, and you made your own compound mixtures, liquids, and your solutions, eye drops. You didn't have those things back then to speak of.
You bought them in bulk, and then you mixed them. You bought the certain ingredients.
Yes,
and
that's right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Very skilled work. Took a lot of knowledge and know-how.
Well, that, right now, it's as far as, I don't guess I've filled a capsule or an ointment, a compound, a mixture, or made an emulsion in the last, I can almost say, safe to say, in 15 or 20 years. I've ever done that. It's like everything now is just already put up. All you got to do is just count it out or pour it out. Mm-hmm. It's just, it's altogether different. Most of the, seem to me like most of the modern pharmacists, of course, they're much more advanced in the field of pharmacy, really, than I am, as to update matters, because they're taught now more or less in school as toward laboratory work. And when I was taught in school, we were schooled more in the practical things that you'd have to do running an old community drugstore. That's a vast difference now. So many of these boys now that get out, they don't know a thing in the world about salesmanship or very little about how to run a drugstore. And so I found it. They may be getting over into that now, because some of them were complaining, you know, of a lot of these young boys going into pharmacy school just didn't know what to do as far as the front merchandise was concerned and such as that, and salesmanship. And they didn't seem to be taught that way. And that's when my oldest boy, he's a pharmacist, and he was schooled in the prescription drugs well, but as far as out front and running the drugstore, he didn't know his head and hole.
Right. Going back to your training in Louisville, did you have any training in actually working with organic substances like roots and herbs? Did you have a lab on in that, perchance?
Oh, yes.
You did?
Yeah, we had chemistry labs and botany. We had, the study of plants and so forth. We had all that.
A lot of that.
It was more practical then. Uh-huh.
But when you came here and started work in the early years, did you have any relationship with, my understanding is that these people, before they had pharmacists and even before they had doctors, quite often were pretty, some of the folk traditions of skilled at mixing herbs and roots and things together. Did you ever know of anybody like that?
No, I don't know of anybody personally in this county that done things like that, although I'm sure it was done, because I have heard a number of people, you know, that I've talked to about their grannies years ago that mixed various herbs and roots and so forth and making cough syrups and things like that. Of course, I know that was done quite a bit when we first come here, because they would come in and buy the ingredients to mix them at home, making some home remedies, to buying various drugs. I do know that. Now we're not. A lot of those drugs that they used to buy like that and mixing are practically the same past. They just don't mix them anymore like they used to.
Don't know how. Yeah. Can you recall some of the drugs that people did buy just individually to mix?
Well, let's see, it's glycerin and making their cough syrups. And of course they had their own honey. They bought rock candy. And naturally they used a little alcoholic alcohol and mixing it and making a cough syrup. And we've had them come in, and I don't know how they made it, and by Golden Seal they used to take this for their stomach. And it is a good stomach remedy in its day. We don't sell much of that anymore now like we used to. But when we first come here, we sold a lot of drugs that way that were home remedies that these people just made up themselves.
I want you begin to operate. How do you get started in the community? How do you get to know the doctors and get them working with you? Can you kind of enlighten me on that? How you just come in here?
Well, the way I done, when I came here, of course, I went up and talked to Dr. Meese, and so Doc, he was such a good old fellow, he just about took me in as my second daddy, more or less, because he helped me quite a bit, and then, of course, he introduced me to the other doctors in the county, and he more or less spoke for me as to why I was there, and he would hope that they would help support me, that we'd keep a drugstore here, and they did.
And Dr. Meese, G.C.
He was really the one that really helped me.
And he was a coal company doctor, was he?
No, he was when he first come here, because he worked up here at Barron Fork, for Barron Fork Coal Company. But then when he came to Whitley City, then he still done that work. He still went to the camp. But he also then done private practice, you see, in this whole locality. But he was really the one that really helped me more than anything else in getting started here.
Did you find it in the beginning, even though this was somewhat declining in terms of prosperity with the coal mines going out and lumbering, it still was a fairly profitable business?
Yes, we managed to pay our bills without any problems. I'll tell you really that when we really started to making any money at all or being able to make any seer way ahead was when they first established the welfare programs. Mm-hmm. Then that really helped us more than, of course, that was some years after that, you know, when I first started here. That really was a great shot in the arm then, because then's when we began to really making some money on it. Otherwise, the other way, we were just living, more or less. That's about all you can say about it. But we done just as well, I guess, as anybody else on the circumstances, because, so you take back 1929, 30, and along in there, that was some rough times then. Just, they refer back to it now as the Depression, and that was just about what you can call it, too. So in all, we've done right well, I guess, on the circumstances.
You think we're moving into circumstances somewhat similar to that today?
You mean as far as
economy?
The economy is mm-hmm. concerned? Yes, I think we're... Things are going to get a little tougher, but then.
Well, what about particularly in areas like this where there is apparently a lot of poverty that has been involved, you know, has been supported and have been helped by Medicaid, and all these are being cut out? What effect is that going to have on people's health care, do you think?
Well, it's not going to be a very bright picture, that's for sure. But I'll tell you that seemingly our county has been turned a poverty county for years. And it seems like that to me, as long over the years that I've been here, that we're just about 5 to 10 years behind everybody else. In other words, everybody else is feels it before we it strikes us, mm-hmm. which is really a very fortunate in our behalf, mm-hmm. because even though we haven't really set the woods afire, so to speak, compared with other places, but I think most of us, on the circumstances, we're able to take it more so than a lot of those that's expanded, and then all at once the bottom fell out from under. Because we haven't expanded that fast, and then had the bottom kicked out from under. So ours has just been a very smooth process.
Mm-hmm. But you did build another drugstore, didn't you? You have two, I believe, in town, do you?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
Why did you do that? Was that
one of the main reasons that we done it was the doctors were interested in putting in a building, and we had already bought out another drugstore in the shopping center just downtown, and when the doctors became interested in wanting to get a little bit out of town and to increase the size of their building, we decided then we'd like to increase the size of our drugstore, and we were able to purchase this land up there. We owned the land, you see, and so we just got together with the doctors and said, "Well, now look here, let's just if you want to expand your building and we want to expand ours, and we own this land, why don't we just form another organization and put this building up here and make it a doctor's building for both a pharmacist and a doctor's building." And they said that would be fine. They would like that.
Sounds good.
And we had more room as to parking and so forth. We didn't have that when they were in the old building out here, the doctors. They didn't have room hardly to take care of the parking facilities. And then, too, of course, my son, the youngest son, was a doctor, and he was with Dr. Winchester.
Is he with the group in the group practice? With
right.
You?
Uh-huh. And, of course, that was another reason that we went into it up there. And it seems to me like it, years ago, all the town we had was just what you saw down here on Main Street at the... When I see so many, we've got other places that moved out into small areas that are shopping centers, and it seems like the people are beginning to move out. Even in other towns, they're moving out away from what used to be the town proper, and that's the same thing's happening here. So that's one reason why we wanted to move out too, so we could have more room.
Mm-hmm.
That seems to be the general trend now.
Now, there's also, isn't there a clinic that by some a nun that had been working with the Health Center Home Care, isn't she building a clinic in that same area?
There's a building next door there to us that we own. The church people of the town, the Catholic Church and the Protestant churches have gotten together, and it's a health care center, and one of the girls, it's one of the nuns here, that's been doing a lot of that work heretofore, she is sort of helping a great deal up there at this particular place where we have the center. Or maybe it's two or three of the nuns, I don't know just how many there are together, but I do know that she's a great help up there for them. And of course, we have our comprehensive care center over here for people, you know, that has a mental ailment right next door. This used to be the superintendent of school building, but they had this program there now, and this comprehensive care. And of course, this we have two medical centers, really. We have the one up here where our drugstore is, you just mentioned, and we have one out on New Highway 27, Dr. Perry and Dr. West. And really have two little medical centers.
The doctors also seem to be more in little centers than in your period. I guess there were more country doctors, weren't they, that
right.
lived in little places?
Yeah, they were all, back when we first come here, they were scattered all over the county. Just like I said, in the beginning when we started this interview, that each of the coal camps down here had their own doctors. And they just took care of those patients within their own camp at that time. Of course, I'm sure they overlapped at time. Maybe some in another camp and go see the doctor here, but that was their real purpose. They had their own doctors in their own camps, and usually that was their responsibility.
The early period, again, since you've reminded me of the fact that it was very different in many ways back then, you were really at that time the drug center downtown for the whole county, right?
Right. Other than the company-owned doctors, but
the company-owned doctors did still get drugs through their company thing,
right?
To a certain extent.
Some of the drugs that they didn't handle themselves, they would come over and pick them up from me. Because they didn't carry everything. They carried just mostly those things for just the more or less the common ailments, you know, like aches and pains and colds and so forth like that. That what they would have more frequently, ailments than any other thing else. But if they needed something real special, like, well, then they would either come over and pick it up from me or else have me to order it for them, which I done.
And as to your knowledge, they didn't have a trained pharmacist over there. They probably just had somebody that bought
it. They didn't have a trained pharmacist at all. See, they gave the medicine out themselves in their offices.
They just had a place that the drugs came in that they ordered, and they went and picked them up and gave them out in their office.
Right, they just hand them out, you know, as their patients came in. Well, then they would give them the drugs that were just mostly for these common ailments and just ailments that that you'd have be more prevalent than anything else, you see, like your colds and your aches and your pains and arthritis and so forth. Such as that. They didn't, if there's any specialty medicines, of course they'd have me to either check with me if I had them, or else they would just have me to order it for them.
These people, even the ones who were employed by the coal companies, did they sometimes work with doctor on other people that maybe were not coal miners, to your knowledge?
Do what now?
Did they doctor other people as well as the people in the coal camps?
Oh, yes. Yes.
Uh-huh. They tended to have a kind of a private practice on
right.
the side.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Yes, that's right.
So then they would
come to
you direct.
At that time, most all of them, though, were miners or lumbermen. Of course, I'm sure there was others here that just, say, for instance, those that already retired or something, maybe that were on pensions or something. Whether the doctors supplied them with the medicine then on their, the way they had in the very beginning, where they paid in so much to the company, I don't know. They may have just gone in, out, more or less. I guess that's where these private individuals, where the private practice was developed from these people.
Because it probably was a gradual process. As the industry declined, then they would take more private practice on.
Right.
Until eventually, like Dr. Meese, they would primarily be private physicians.
Right. He was a private physician. He treated miners, some miners, and he treated people that wasn't even associated with the mines that were doing other work in this county. You know, like a groceryman or something like that, and he was their doctor.
Now, the people that would come in, as you say, in the early period, to buy specific elements of that you knew were probably going to be used to fashion some kind of little home remedy, were those people mainly people that would be relatively poor in terms of not necessarily, they would more in the backwoods type people than the salaried coal miner or the person in the town?
You mean the ones that made up their own remedies? So not necessarily. No, there was a lot of these people that were miners that made up, they had their own recipes and they made up their own medicines, common medicines like their cough syrup especially. They didn't necessarily mean that they were just supposed to have gotten just their medicine from the doctors only that was employed by the company. That wasn't necessarily that way, because they made up their own remedies too.
Even though they could have gotten it through the through the company store, they could,
right.
But they went on and did the old thing.
Right. A lot of them had their own special recipes, you know, because these people through here, I found that from their grandmothers and grandfathers and great-grandfathers and whatnot, had just handed down their recipes all down through the ages. And they were some mighty good ones, too, by the way.
Were they at that period when you came in, were they still using the natural herbs and roots, or had they begun to depend more on matter of fact, like you said, Golden Seal was, I understand it is an indigenous plant, isn't it, Golden Seal?
Yeah, it's...
But they didn't gather it like they used to, they'd have been to buy it...
They done both ways.
Uh-huh.
Some gathered it and powdered it up, and some just came in to buy it. They're still doing that now. A lot of these people go out here and dig up ginseng and so forth, because right now it's high as the dickens on the market. A fellow told me the other day, I believe on ginseng, it was way up $100 and some odd a pound. It's awful expensive.
Yeah, the Chinese is a big market in China for it. I think that people have discovered it.
Now, of course, a lot of these drugs, I've had these fellows bring some of it in. I've never seen any. I'd seen it in the school, you know, where it had been broken up and all. But I had never seen any in the live plant. I wouldn't have known it if I walked out in the middle of the road. But I've had a lot of these people that knew all this, that had been in the habit of digging these herbs for years and years, and bring it in and let me see it, see your actions, what it looked like.
Interesting.
We didn't have that in school. We just had it already in a powder form or that nature.
Yeah.
We just didn't see it in the plant except just maybe pictures in our book.
Mm-hmm.
That was real interesting. Some of these old fellows would bring this stuff in and explain it, tell me what to do with it and so forth. It was very interesting.
What were some of the other herbs that they would bring in besides ginseng and yellow seal?
Well, mayapple and larkspur, just about the most anything you can name that grows around, except, you know, unless it's something like it's a tropical plant of that nature. And there's a lot of herbs that grow around here that these people still dig and use. But it's not as prevalent as it was, because they begin now, since they can buy the preparations already prepared, that's beginning to work in that direction. more so than going back to the old time remedies. And then, of course, they're becoming better educated in new drugs and through their magazines and so forth that they get in their farm journals and whatnot, that they have a tendency now to turn more to the later information and later use of drugs than what they did when we first come here.
And probably a lot of the young ones wouldn't know how, wouldn't know what one looked like.
There's some of them, in my opinion, these young children wouldn't know a thing in the world about what Grandma and Grandpa was talking about.
Well, that's an interesting, an awful interesting thing. And that's shows that you were sensitive and intelligent and related to people to know that that was going on, that those fellows would bring the stuff in and talk to you about it, even though you'd not seen it in med school. You knew saw that it had validity.
Yeah, it was very interesting. I enjoyed it because and they seemed to enjoy bringing it in and giving me what they know about it and what they used it for. A lot of times we didn't agree on everything that they were using it for, but that was all right.
If in some general way, I know it's more complicated than I can understand, but could you give me a possibility of an illustration of something that they were using that was good from your scientific knowledge and something that you felt was not very effective?
Oh boy, that's kind of hard.
Well, you've mentioned Golden Seal.
Yeah,
it would be good. And how did they use Golden Seal?
They mixed it at that time. They came in and bought Pepsin, the elixir of lactated Pepsin, which is one of your enzymes in your stomach, you know. And they mixed it with that, and it is a good a stomach remedy. It seems to have a coating-like effect, and I've had some of these older people tell me they'd been taking it for years where they'd had sorenesses in the stomach and probably maybe had ulcers and didn't know what it was they were using it. And it seemed to work for them. And of course, you know, you get all kind of wild ideas somewhere. Some of them talking about using this on sores or something that they thought was cancers. Some of this drug that I know good and well, it didn't work, but they just hadn't had their, they
didn't
just
harm
what
anyway.
It said in it, and you ain't going to change them. It don't make no difference what you tell them.
As long as it didn't do any harm.
That's right.
I guess that's a tendency of the mind. If something works somewhere, you wouldn't work everywhere.
Well, a lot of times, you know yourself that your mind can play some tricks on you, make you think something's wrong with you when actually it is. The doctor couldn't find and save your life what you think's wrong with you when you let your mind get the upper hand on you. That's,
you know, you hear people talk about doctors using pills with nothing in them but sugar, just to placebo, right.
Yeah.
Did you find that was seemed to be pretty practiced quite often by doctors, if they had someone like that?
We've had some of it, yes. I think it was a good thing. I know a few instances where a person just had it in their mind that they just had to have this particular drug or else they just wasn't anything helping them, wasn't going to do them any good. And the doctor knew it wasn't doing them more harm than was good, and he had changed it to something that wasn't a sugar pill, but is a placebo tablet is made. Wasn't anything in it to be injurious or anything, and it helped him. And really and truly, that that patient profited more than if he'd continued to give them that other that they were wanting. We don't like to do anything like that, you know, because it's not very good. Looking at it in one sense of the word, it's not a very good way of trying to fool somebody. It's really, and that's not the purpose.
No, it's
but
just
it's
in
a,
cases,
the real it's purpose is just trying to get them off of something that you know is doing them more harm than good. And if it works, then I say it's of some value.
On the other hand, the opposite of placebos would be those patent medicines which may have drugs in them that were harmful. Did you have to battle with that, like things that would have codeine in that didn't? I don't know exactly what I'm talking about now, but I know when I was growing up, people sometimes would buy things that had drugs in them. Trying to think, paragaric and that type of thing.
Well, so you can't buy that no more in
right,
the state of Kentucky.
Could you in your early practice?
Yes, you could buy it by signing up for it, but you had certain strict regulations on that.
Even in the early period?
Yeah, you had to keep, in other words, like if you came in, say you come in today and you were using it for a legitimate purpose, for upset stomach or stomach cramps or something like that, and you bought as much you were allowed, I believe. It's been some time since I saw. I think you were allowed 2 ounces, and I believe it was 48 hours. It's been so long I can't remember for sure. And you signed your name to it and your address and all and what you got and how much. Well, now you can come in the next morning and get some more because I would know that, even though the law didn't say it, I would know that you didn't need it.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you took that much of it and come back the next morning, then I knew, I would know something was wrong then, mm-hmm. that it was being used for other than what it was intended. Mm-hmm. We had that, of course they had they passed some laws, I don't remember how long ago it's been now. They got to abusing it, and they had to do something to take care of that situation, which in one sense of the word it was a good thing, but in another sense of the word it really deprived the people that really used it legitimately for little aches and pains that you just commonly have, stomach disorders like diarrhea and whatnot, which it was very good for that. But when they started abusing it, some of them, they had to make some changes. And that's true with all your drugs anymore. That's the reason why we've got so many regulations because of the abuse of it. And it's not the pharmacist that's abused, causing the abuse. You know as well as I do that it's being shipped in all over the world, from all over the world, various kind, like your cocaine. I've never seen cocaine in my life. But I hear about it being used a lot. And we never even had cocaine in school. A lot of those things we had. Now just take, for instance, this marijuana. We had it in school. All I knew at that time was hemp. I had never heard of marijuana till just recently.
Mm-hmm.
And we had it right there in the school.
Mm-hmm.
And we knew what it would do,
mm-hmm.
but I didn't know it was marijuana.
It had a.
The only name we had was hemp, and which it is. It's
sure.
It's,
what it
yeah,
is.
They used it to make rope.
Yeah, in the early period.
And
it did have have medicinal values about it to be used properly. Is that right?
I don't know whether it did or not. We never did have any I never even saw it listed in any of the pharmacy books that I can recall of having any. About the only thing when we discussed it in class is the fact that fibers were used for making hemp or making rope. That's about all I knew about it. I never heard of it being called marijuana until, you know, just the last few years that you heard so much about it. That's what's the strangest thing. Sure. I don't even know if the teachers knew it or not. They did. They never did say anything about it.
Mm-hmm. It is strange. Yeah. Drugs are, it's fascinating. Did you think this long, do you see an increase in what you've said? There's more regulation as time's gone on from the period you've been involved. Does this really work a handicap on the druggist as far as being able to dispense it?
No, I don't think so.
I think it's
an advantage to the druggist because even though we have these regulations on it like that, it's advantageous to us in this respect that it more or less takes the responsibility off of you when it's done according to the regulations.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people that's not in the drug business or anything that they don't realize just how much of a responsibility it is. You see the druggist behind the counter there. It looks like he's got an easy job, and it, as far as the labor is concerned, it is easy. There's nothing hard about it. But the mental part of it, that's where it's
keeping abreast
really does keep you in a kind of a tense sense of situation all the time. It's just that mental phase of it.
And that's true even as before you were more involved with actually mixing things together. Now you're just trying to stay up on the latest pharmaceuticals that are coming out. I guess
right.
In a way it was a mental.
Yeah, and it's there's a more responsibility seem like on you anymore. And the same way with doctors. Seems like it's almost getting to the point that you can't do anything. That back then it seemed to me you had the freedom of practicing your profession. Now you don't seem to have that freedom because,
well,
Lord, you're just liable to be sued for something that's for no reason at all, really.
That's what I was kind of getting at, I think, in terms of, I can see how your point that the regulations would take some of the responsibility off your shoulders, but I was thinking it seems like things have gotten so legal, though, it sort of takes too much away from the professional in terms of doing what he, for fear that he will get sued or...
Well, in that respect, looking at it from that standpoint, yes, it's you don't feel as freely now as to practice your profession like you once did. Or at least I don't feel that way. Because it seems like it's just too, you're too limited. When I first got out of school, well, whatever you thought was best, in the same way with the doctor, whatever he thought was best, well, then the people accepted it. And it seemed to me like anymore that's, if there's any error is made, then you're in for trouble, even though you may sign papers, you know. What you think is relieving you of the responsibility. You know what I'm talking about. When you go into a hospital, they ask you to sign this and sign that. But yet, you still have your problem, especially the doctors. I don't know too many drugstores that's ever been sued for.
Of course, that's probably the fact that they are so regulated.
Well, that's true. I mean, that's one of
the
biggest advantages. I can cite you a story. Well, it's not a story, it's a true happening. I don't know just how long ago it's been. See, used to you could buy iodine or buy anything like that in a grocery store or at a drugstore. Well, they changed that regulation. I don't know how long ago it's been now, but anyway, when you sell iodine or anything like that, you have to register it in a poison register, which it is a poison. But used to, they didn't have regulations to govern it at that time. Anyhow, what I was getting back to, this druggist had sold a young lady. She was a teenager, I guess. But, she came in to get some iodine. And he registered it like he was supposed to, according to law. And lo and behold, that kid took it home and drank and killed herself. And they sued him, and they about sent him up. And that, but now if he hadn't registered that according to those regulations that he was required to do, they would have sure had the grounds to do it. But that was the only thing that saved him.
Thank you.
So I say regulations work pretty well. I mean they're for your own protection.
Right.
Even though sometimes it makes it seem like you've got a burden on your back, but it's still the best thing, I think.
What were some of the, if you could say in layman's terms, some of the things that you put together for medicines that you dispensed in the earlier period that now have come in already pre-done from the pharmaceutical firms? Of course, I know there are a lot of different drugs now than at that point, but what were some of the things that you compounded in your drugstore in the early years when you got out of school?
Be frankly honest about it, that the medicine that you dispense now and compared to when I got out of it, they don't even use it anymore. It's altogether different.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't even make any comparison as to what's already prepared now and what we had to make at that time.
Well, what were some of the things that you made at that time?
Well, about the main thing, I guess, in what you're speaking of, would have been in your ointments. Now, take for instance, Dr. McLeod has a formula of his own that we used to make ourselves. That had I can't tell you exactly all the ingredients because I don't recall all of them. It had zinc oxide, it had starch, and that's two of them, I remember. It's got about six items, and I can't recall all of them. Well, anyway, now you're having some of those same ingredients that we used then, and a lot of your modern ointments that are already prepared for over-the-counter use. But they're just, like I said a minute ago, they're just not too many things anymore that you're having in comparison, because most of your medicines now are synthetic, and it's just altogether different. I guess there's been a greater change, I guess, in the last 10 or 15 years, to my knowledge, as there has been the last 30 years.
Now tell me the difference between that. You say synthetic. You mean by that inorganic compounds as opposed to organic substances?
Well, no. It's organic. When I speak about synthetic, I mean those things that have been duplicated in the laboratories. Take the old medicines sometimes. Certain ways you prepared those medicines, you got certain things out of it. Let's see. Take, for instance, the coca bean. You can prepare it from one type of preparation where you maybe run it through what we call used to call a percolator, like you put the drug and run alcohol through it, or alcohol water mixture, or just plain water, and you get certain extractives out of that drug that were water soluble, or alcohol soluble, or glycerin and alcohol soluble, or something like that, is altogether a different extraction from what just that one drug. Okay, that's what we had, that's sort of the way we had to do it years ago in our laboratories at school. Okay, now today they make that same thing chemically, and that's what I meant when I said synthetically.
Without the bean?
Yeah. Yeah, they can duplicate it in a chemical reaction that you used to get it from a drug, just by various types of solvents.
That's very interesting. It's about ready to turn over here. It's already blinking.
Let's talk a little bit about how you, as a druggist here, related to the doctors, and how the patients related to you and to the doctors. You were telling me about this incident that happened to you down at the theater. Would you tell that story again?
Yeah, well, let me get a little, mm-hmm. just a little ahead of that. Mm-hmm. Whenever I first came here, the police was instrumental in helping me get started here with the other doctors. Kind of helped me to get my feet on the ground. And our relationships with one another, as time went on, become very good. The doctors, after they got to know me better, began to have more confidence in what I was trying to do in the medical line, and which in relation to their practice. And as I say, our relationship became very good, that we began to depend upon one another. And a little incident that happened one night, after work, I'd gone down here to the theater to watch a show, and while I was in there, some fellow came in there and said, I want you to go out to the house there. I've got a problem I want you to take care of. And I said, well, I can't do that. I said, Dr. Meese, that's his line of work. You better go back up there and get him. He said, well, I just come from up there, and he sent me to get you. I said, well, you'll have to go back and see him. And he said, well, all right, and he did. I don't know what developed after that, though, really.
But you left out one thing. What did he call you when he asked you to go out and look out? What did he call you, Doctor?
Yeah, he called me that too. Well, a lot of people got to where they call me they call me doctor here, but really I'm not a doctor in a sense. I don't have a doctor of pharmacy degree. I only have a bachelor of science in pharmacy, which was one of the higher degrees at that particular time when I got out of school.
Well, this is the thing I'm trying to establish. Now, Dr. Meese, for instance, did not have a doctorate either, really. Isn't that true in terms of formal education, what you said? He'd had it through experience.
He may have had a little schooling. I never did quite understand just what it was. But basically, the time that he practiced was over a period of years, and through a recommendation from another doctor, as I understood it here in town, that and over a number of years, which was required in their profession, he was able to secure a license to practice an MD. And that's same is true with us. Whenever, at the time I took my state board pharmacy, we had some fellows there then that came under a different kind of a law than what I came under, whereby they'd worked so many years in a drugstore, well, then they too could take a special test, and if they passed it, they would get a license that would be just like what I had. They would be free to practice pharmacy just like myself. But that was the last year they were able to do that. And our pharmacy schools at that time varied. They had a 2 years, then a three. My class came to the 4 years. I had to go 4 years to pharmacy school, plus 2 years apprenticeship. And before I could take my state board and become licensed. These others, prior to that, before the laws changed, they could go 2 years and so much apprenticeship and so forth, that they obtained their license at that time.
Did you work under someone when you were doing your internship that had not been to formal school that long, had secured his license through that process?
I don't know whether I worked with one that I took my internship under, how long they had gone to school. I know it wasn't 4 years because, like I said, my class was the first 4 year group. So they evidently went to pharmacy school a 2 years or a 3 year period. I wouldn't know. I did work with a boy in Harriman, though, that under their laws at that particular time, if they worked so many years in a drugstore, and then they went to a school down in Georgia. It was in Georgia where they had this school that they could go so many weeks, and then when they could take the exam, if they passed it, then they too could secure their license under their laws at that time. But all that now has been changed. About every state now has the same regulations, so that you could practice maybe in one state and have your license in this state, and you could reciprocate then with another state by paying a certain fee, whatever's required, or you could go and take the test, either one you want to do. That's the way the situation is at the present time. So about all the states now have pretty much the same laws and regulations.
The thing that intrigues me is what I wonder about, why is it that there was no pharmacist here for so long a period of time of the nature you met, like the fellow in Tennessee or in my boy in Georgia? Why didn't they have someone that had been, because they didn't have a drugstore, I guess, right?
Well, yes.
I mean, if you had gone, if you say you go into the bluegrass, you certainly must have had pharmacists that had trained under someone and had been and gotten a license and were practicing earlier, you know, without, why it didn't happen here? Was it just that there wasn't a drugstore, I guess?
Well, I suppose that they're just... There was a number of county seats when I got out of school that didn't have a drugstore, and there's still some of them exist even today that don't have drugstores. Why anyone hasn't gone into those places, I don't know.
That's
I don't know what the reason. Just like, I reckon it's just like a lot of our counties. We got some counties in Kentucky that don't have a doctor. I guess it's the same situation would be for some reason or another, druggist just didn't figure they'd make a go of it, and Reagan just didn't take the chance of going into these localities.
Mm-hmm.
That'd be the only thing I could say about it.
Mm-hmm.
That's sort of the way it was when I come here, you know, that I was more or less a-looking. I didn't know whether I'd make a go of it here or not, because as we spoke before, the situation wasn't too good, because it was kind of a bad year when I started, and then everything seemed to be in comparison with the towns around about, it seemed like it was going downhill instead of going uphill. But that has all changed though now. Everything seems to be somewhat better than it was then, but yet our economy now isn't the best in the world at the present time, but we're hoping it will be.
But you must have gotten a really a good education, not only in the university, but in this internship thing that gave you some real skills at how to run a business and how to organize in order to have done as well as you did through, as you say, a rather difficult period.
Well, I attribute that more or less to these chain stores I work for. That most of these chains that you work for, is even now, have an educational program whereby that you can learn the out front phase of pharmacy. You're supposed to learn your other in school, near back in the prescription department and so forth. But you learn a lot of just from practical experience from these programs that they have in these chain stores, and they have some good ones too.
And I guess some of the managers, not necessarily pharmacists, are they?
Oh no, I work for Lane. I believe it was in Lane that the manager of this place wasn't even a pharmacist. But they had two pharmacists employed there besides myself. And that's true in a lot of even our stores now. We have a lot of drug stores and even in our state now that don't have the pharmacists are not the managers are not registered pharmacists.
So there is kind of there's a science of pharmacy, and then there's an art to it too, isn't it? In terms of, it's the knowing the drugs and being able to manage them, but then there's the how do you relate to the community and how do you dispense the human part. That's kind of an art, I guess, isn't it?
My philosophy has always been that to do unto others as you have others do unto you. I feel like if a person wants to serve the public, then that's what he's supposed to do. I don't care what kind of profession he's in. That's his obligation. If he gets to the point where he don't want to serve them, why, he might just well get out of it and get into something else. That's the way I feel about it. Especially in the medical phase of it, because people depend on you. Mm-hmm. And I feel like a fella don't want to do that. Well, he don't need to be in it. He better get in something else.
Why do you think the people called the local druggist a doctor, Dr. Burgess?
I don't know. I've often wondered that myself. But it's always been that way. Even when I was growing up, I called Mr. Dyer, their home doc, Dyer. That's all I ever knew him at. And the other druggists that I knew, the Tibbles and so forth, and in Somerset, I always called them Doc, because that's what everybody else called them. And I assumed that they were doctors, just like MD, but I didn't know that till after I got through pharmacy school. And I reckon that it's just.
Can you think of anything about your experience over the years here in relating to some of the people that you served? Like you were talking about the guy that wanted you to come out and help him. Anything that you remember in your work with people?
Well, I don't know if I can pinpoint anything.
Did you subject yourself to call in case of an emergency to go and help somebody to go down to the store and get something out?
Yes. That to me was just as important of service as anything I know of, if a person needed medicine, even if it's for veterinary use for the stock or anything like that, that they would ask me to help them with that and prescribing something for their hogs or cattle or anything else, and which we've done. Because we didn't have a veterinarian in this county. We had a man several years ago, that a fellow by the name of King, had done a lot of that veterinary work, and he wasn't a licensed veterinarian, but he had done it all his life with his father and his father before him, and he just grew up with it. And he come in any number of times to say, I've got this problem, and he wanted me to have him mix up some medicine to take care of the situation. Of course, I had my books there, and I go look it up so I know what I was doing, because I hadn't anything about veterinary medicine, but he knew pretty much himself about the treatments of stock, yeah. And the same way with people, I never did like to prescribe anything, because of not being an MD, you know, not knowing the problem. Of course, anybody would come in and want something that, or a problem that, a pain or something, that they could tell me, the headache or something like that, I could give them something for that without being out of order, I think. And which, that's pretty well true in all our branches and pharmacies. Just if a person wants something, just some common ailments, we can help them out in that respect. But we don't prescribe. That's not our business. We're just not doctors. And that's just the way I feel about that. Mm-hmm. I think that's the doctor's, that's what he studies, and I think that's his prerogative, and I don't think that the druggist has got any right to interfere with anybody else's profession, and he should feel the same way that he shouldn't interfere with your profession.
Well, legally, you're not, you can't, nobody can prescribe, can they, formally?
No, that's, because you're just not trained in that. I kind of like the situation that I had one time to come up. I don't know how the situation arose, but this something happened, you know, that somebody had told the patient about. They'd ask him about a medication, and then they told him what it's used for. But it so happened that the doctor had given it to him for a different reason. Now, that's one thing I won't tell anybody what a medicine is used for, because so many of our medicines this day and time are used for so many different purposes that you might tell them one thing and be correct. But yet the doctor may have given the patient, given it to him for something else, and therefore it don't leave a very good taste in either one's mouth, you know, and something like that. And I don't think that's one reason why I say that the person should prescribe anything, because it's...
Well, this person had brought, that's the story you tell, they had brought in a prescription that had been used for another, had been prescribed by a doctor, and they wanted you to fill that for a different person, for a, they thought was a common ailment. Is that what they did?
No. What happened, that the doctor prescribed something, that medication, and the person just wanted to know what it was used for. Evidently, the doctor didn't tell them.
I see. Mm-hmm.
Really, what the person should have said is, should have asked them. Ask them what their problem was, and then, mm-hmm. then they could have told them yes or no. What really the way it was, it just this person just wanted to know what the drug was used for. Mm-hmm. And like I said, that a lot of these drugs have got so many different uses.
That's right, I understand.
That you might tell them one thing, and the doctor may have told them, gave it to them for something else. And that's what happened in this case. The person, the individual told him what the drug was used for, but he didn't happen to name the reason for what the doctor gave it to him for, which it was used for that also. So the patient got the wrong idea that the doctor had given him something, but that he said wasn't the matter with it. Mm-hmm. And so the doctor got upset about it, and so that's the reason why I told you that I just wouldn't tell anybody what the drug's used for, because a lot of times they have so many different uses, you're just running into a problem then.
Mm-hmm. 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 Well, how about a person like, say, reading about and asking about this nun that's out here that's starting this clinic. Now, she has a degree in pharmacy, and I think a degree in nursing. But under the present system, she could not prescribe medicine, though. Is that correct? She could not prescribe, make a prescription, write a prescription out.
No,
she
may
nobody,
not,
wouldn't.
There's nobody can do that but an MD.
Mm-hmm.
They're the ones who can write prescriptions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense.
I mean, that I'm acquainted with. Mm-hmm. There may be well, that's all I know is that it have to be a medical doctor. As far as I know, no one can write prescriptions or prescribe either.
It seems to me that
of course your dentist can. You see, under
the dentist
certain,
can under yeah, certain restrictions,
on certain things, yes, pertaining to their particular profession. They can prescribe something for you for a heart trouble because they're not an MD.
It seems that the doctor and the pharmacist have to be very, very closely related in the matter of trust and knowing limitations in both counts. And you said in your early training that you didn't actually work with doctors especially in hospitals.
No, not like they do now. Mm-hmm.
And that the doctors here, if I remember earlier, you said on the tape that some of them were not accustomed to writing prescriptions as you'd been taught in school as to how they would be mm-hmm. written. They knew what they needed, but they didn't know how to communicate it on paper to you.
Yeah, getting back to that, I thought of this when I forgot about it. When I was in school, there where I roomed, we had some boys that studied medicine long, and there's three or four of us that were pharmacists studying pharmacy, or that roomed in this place, you see. And when these boys in the medical school came to the part in their training in school of writing prescriptions, they didn't know a thing in the world about it, so they had to come in and let us show them, you know, how to do it.
It's a little informal education.
And of course, that really wasn't a whole lot their line, really. I mean, that's more or less the pharmacist's responsibility. The doctor knows what he wants. And he knows how to give it, but a lot of times you have to direct them in writing the prescription and so forth. Well, as a matter of fact, I don't know how it is now, but I know these boys, when we were rooming together, they said, fellas, we don't, we know the least about drugs with anybody, because they said, we don't study that. We study how they use them and what they're used, what they'll do, but as far as about the drug itself, we don't know, we know very little about the ingredients and mm-hmm. the composition of it. Mm-hmm. So we don't study that. And I can understand that. He said, that's what you fellows are supposed to know. That's true. We're supposed to know more about drugs than a doctor.
Well, that's certainly true. You should know more, but it seems like a doctor would need some general orientation to it.
Well, he knows how it's used. I mean, how it's used in the body and what it will do and all phases of that. But as far as the composition, they don't have any reason to know whether it's made from aspirin or made from something else, the chemical structure of it. It's not really necessary. They probably teach them that now, but back then they didn't know because these boys had to ask us. They come and studied with us.
They had botany, I guess, but they hadn't made the
I don't know whether they had, botany or not.
That's interesting.
At that time.
Well, now these doctors that were here, you mentioned Dr. Meese, which you're not sure exactly how much education he had in terms of formal education. But were most of the doctors graduate MDs or had some others have had experience and some training and then passed the board?
I don't know about all of them now, really. Some of them I do. Dr. Williams, he was, I'd forgotten where he graduated, what medical school. Dr. Simpson, I believe Dr. Simpson told me he graduated from the University of Louisville. And Dr. Haley, I don't know where he finished. He was a graduate, but I don't know where. Dr. Meese had taken training, but I don't know just how far, you know, because I never did understand too much about the laws, you know, of medicine, of the MD like I do drugs.
Well, I know that I've come across doctors that have practiced, particularly in the 30s and 40s, which may have been a little before your time, but in Wayne County, I know there were doctors called country doctors who had not had any formal training whatsoever. They just were self-educated and practiced with a doctor until the point they were, I'm not even sure whether they were licensed, but they did practice medicine.
Well, they had been licensed, I'm sure, under some regulation.
Well, I'm right, and I got this from Dr. Duncan, who's a doctor in the county, that they were in this Wayne County.
Duncan?
Yes, I talked to him, and he says he named a couple of people, and I had earlier knew of these people because some other people I talked to knew of them that practiced around the area, some kind of the county. The area that joins this county, you know.
Mm-hmm.
There was, and I can't think of the doctor's name, I think of Dr. John Hall or something, that practiced there for a long time. And I believe Dr. Duncan told me that he had never been licensed, actually licensed, but he was accepted in the community as a doctor. Mm-hmm. And could he have written prescriptions to the local pharmacist in Monticello or not?
Yeah, if he was licensed.
Well, I'm not sure. Apparently he wasn't licensed.
Uh-huh.
Now some I know may have been been licensed, but uh-huh. I don't believe this fellow was even licensed. But he had practiced a uh-huh. long time in that area.
Well, they may have had laws back then. I don't know, see. Sort of like I was telling you about these pharmacists, you know, these three boys that I knew of was taking this test when I was there. They'd never gone to school in their life, but they'd worked in a drugstore for all their life, just about. And our laws in our profession at that time, which was that was the last year that it was permitted, that they could take a test, and if they passed it, then they would automatically have a license that would be just as equal to mine. And it may have been the same way in medicine. I just don't know about that. Because
mm-hmm.
mm-hmm. I'm quite certain, you know, if you go way back there, I don't know how old some of these medical schools are. I don't know how old the University of Louisville's medical school. It's the only one we've had in the state of Kentucky till the University of Kentucky
med school. That was back during the war, before the war. Same way of Tennessee. Vanderbilt was the only medical school in Tennessee until the World War II broke out, and then we had the University of Tennessee Med School, and I think there's one or two others down in Tennessee now. Mm-hmm. And Georgia's got, Florida's got three or four med schools down there. I think Georgia has. I think they've got one in Augusta
Emory University.
Emory. Yeah, well, Emory's one of the old schools.
Yeah, it's probably equivalent to U of L and Vanderbilt, probably, in, you know, making a comparison between the states.
Yeah. See, that was sort of like it was whenever I was talking about I wanted to study, be a doctor. At that time, they were trying to keep the doctors kind of, you know, regulated. Mm-hmm. And they just wouldn't accept with so many. Mm-hmm. And of course, after when World War II broke out and they needed more doctors for the Army, and they were able to establish more medical schools, and consequently it's we have more doctors, the regulations and sort of eased then.
Mm-hmm. To supply the need.
And the same way about pharmacy school. I don't know, when I went to school there at Louisville College of Pharmacy, as I understood it, the tuition that was paid was all income those schools had. They weren't even, state, I don't even think, even supplied the money for it, as I understood it. And there wasn't too many. Our class was the biggest class they'd had up there forever. And we graduated, we started out with 30, ended up with 15, knocked off the half of the class just after the second year. Of course, they weed you out. And then we picked up some more boys and we got into the junior class, some of them had failed. And I think our class finally did end up with 30 of them.
It's really interesting. I think we